Thoreau Believed in Fairies. That's the title of a Wall Street Journal article. It was a book review of Kevin Dan's biography of Henry David, which was entitled Expect Great Things. And Kevin Dan took that title from what he saw woven into Thoreau's writings throughout his works about this sense of when you can place your expectations on something, they will begin to, you can begin to see them come into fruition. I listened to Kevin Dan on a podcast talk about this biography, and he talked about how, unlike other biographies of Thoreau, which focus on his intellect or his writing per se, Dan focused on Thoreau's spiritual life and tried to write it in a way that Thoreau would have written or would have experienced his life. So he tried to get into Thoreau's being to write this book. He called Thoreau a phenomenologist, one who studies how things work, and notes that for Thoreau, the close observations included a world infused with mystery and spiritual energies, which he literally called fairies within his writing. And but Dan would call them the elemental beings that are infused. And Kevin Dan posits that Thoreau's transcendentalist friends, Ralph Waldo Emerson, Nathaniel Hawthorne, Margaret Fuller, and the rest, all part of the well-educated Boston Unitarian intellectual circles, also shared many of these mystical sensibilities. They didn't separate out their intellect from an understanding of mystical spirituality. The 19th century transcendentalists had rejected biblical scripture as the only source to find your way to the spirit. They broadened their spiritual quests and were among the first to translate and study Hindu texts and bring Eastern philosophies to this country. They studied Greek, Nordic, and Roman mythologies, which were full of divine and magic interpretations and interventions, and they placed an equal importance on their direct experience of the sensual world around them. Through these ways of knowing, these many ways of knowing, they expanded their perceptions of how the world works. They gave credence to the senses, the imagination, their inner intuitions, as well as their intellects. Thoreau wrote, "I am a mystic, a transcendentalist, and a natural philosopher to boot." And by stripping away the artificial and going to live in this little, small cabin by a pond, he allowed himself to be guided by his sense of wonder. And through keen observation, his marvelous intellect, and simplicity, the blade of grass, I loved that introduction, he enjoyed a rich spiritual life, deeply interconnected with the natural world around him, that he recorded every single day in his journal during his 2 years, 2 months, and 2 days on Walden Pond. Walden, his book, has been revered as a uniquely American sacred text. And we can credit the Transcendentalists for the first source of our Unitarian Universalist tradition, direct experience of transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, that moves us to a renewal of spirit. I have thought deeply about Debbie's questions to me. Is it important for adults to retain their sense of wonder? I thought that was the most interesting, the one that really got me percolating. And if so, how can we do this? And is it even harder for kids now in the day of the iPhone? So let's start with a quick definition of wonder. It's defined as a feeling of surprise mingled with admiration, caused by something beautiful, unexpected, unfamiliar, or inexplicable. It's astonishment, those moments of astonishment. Robert Fuller, a professor of religious studies at Bradley University, has studied wonder, which people have critiqued him for taking the wonder out of wonder. And he juxtaposed it with awe, which he said has an evolutionary social benefit, because awe leads to a sense of one's own belittlement. And so in the social structure, the gorilla that feels awe towards the alpha gorilla will know where it stands in that structure. And so awe, they can track down to an evolutionary understanding. But wonder does not do that to people. Wonder leads to curiosity, and it leads to a contemplative space, a non-action space. It doesn't seem to have an evolutionary necessity, and it may be what he would call a unique evolutionary fluke that just comes with the package of being human. A true gift, like beauty, that is best appreciated not for its consumable value, but just by its very existence. So I actually tried on the idea that it's not important to retain a sense of wonder into adulthood. Or maybe it's even not possible to keep that beautiful child's beginner's mind into adulthood. And 1 Corinthians came to mind. It brought me back to biblical knowledge that I had. And this may sound familiar to you. When I was a child, I spoke as a child. I understood as a child, and I thought as a child. But when I became an adult, I put away childish things. Because wonder is connected to surprise, we are in some ways hardwired to put away the surprise of childish things. As we learn more and more about the world around us, it gets harder for us to find those moments of wonder. But as I look at our most prominent thinkers, the people who have shaped this world the most, from our poets to our scientists, I see that they did not cut themselves off from the childish ways of the imagination. Albert Einstein said, "The most beautiful thing we can experience is the mysterious. It is a source of all true art and science. He to whom the emotion is a stranger, who can no longer pause to wonder and stand wrapped in awe, is as good as dead." Cutting ourselves off from these direct experiences of awe and especially of wonder, from the power of our intuitive and imaginative minds, is like cutting off a deeply beautiful part of ourselves, perhaps uniquely human. At the same time, it is ephemeral because it's connected to surprise and astonishment. We can't just summon it up whenever we want. Before I left for my sabbatical in April, I was feeling pretty spiritually dry, and the world felt flat and only full of mechanistic tasks to be accomplished. My to-do list was never ending and felt oppressive. It was through my own busyness, and it was coupled with these trying times that we're living through, for sure. But I realized that I'd slowly cut myself off from my own spiritual life, which I understand as a deep connection to my soul, to intimacy with myself, and with my interconnection to a mystery that is far greater than I can understand and far greater than any of us, and that it expands through time, past, present, and future. So I left you at the end of March pretty darn tired and ready to rest. A spiritual mentor, as I shared this with her, suggested that I spend time on my sabbatical wandering, that's wandering with an A, to try to wind through my days as aimlessly as possible, moving toward that which strikes my fancy at any moment. This is certainly not an easy task for a high doer, certainly not easy both practically or spiritually, but that's what I did. And what she reminded me of, what she told me, which I took to heart, was that if I can remain open to these spiritual longings I have and create spaciousness around me, I will experience that repair, the bringing back together the pieces of myself that had slowly been so distanced that it was almost unrecognizable. Now, if you'll remember, April was not only rainy, there was also a blizzard. So while I did do some wandering outside in nature, I also wandered through tarot cards, animal spirit cards, the Enneagram, therapeutic art, the Boulder Philharmonic, Boulder Burlesque, and the Avengers Endgame, all in one weekend. Books on white fragility, books on aging and dementia, and many moments with my own journal. This softening, contemplative approach to life helped me to feel more whole again and rekindled my astonishment at the very miracle of life, that we are actually even here at all, together. I think it's one of the most beautiful things about being human, our adaptability, that although we can't manufacture the surprise of wonder, we can choose through practice to open ourselves up to the possibility that wonder can bring us. Where is wonder most easily evoked for you? The world today is more cut off from nature than in the time of Thoreau, for sure. And I actually believe that it was the beginning of electricity that began to cut us off from the cycles of nature, from needing to be in the dark and the light as in the rhythm with the earth. But I believe it is a loss that we're cutting ourselves off more and more from our profound interconnection with the natural world, because nature is a most fertile playground for wonder. However, to get to that question about the iPhone, with the vast amount of information available literally at our fingertips, we also now have the opportunity to wander and to wonder in new ways, allowing ourselves to meander through the internet. Pausing when you're tickled by something can bring you to new places of astonishment. Information we never thought we would be able to know. The key seems to be that wondering and wandering require a sense of spaciousness, require an intentionality towards an opening to see what will come. And if all of our children just see us working productively all the time, checking off things on our to-do list, what are we teaching them about adulthood? Why would they want to grow up at all? What are we teaching them about the values of their imaginations, the fairies that they see in the ground? I'd like to add a corollary to Rachel Carson's quote. She says that children need at least one adult to help them keep their sense of wonder alive. I think adults need children to help us keep our sense of wonder alive. And so this sermon ends with an invitation. This summer, if you can, find some children to do this, but otherwise, take it upon yourselves to create some spaciousness in your life, to wander. Allow your curiosity to lead you aimlessly into nature, into books, into movies, into deep conversations, into the internet. Go small, examining the grasshopper that moves her jaw back and forth instead of up and down. Or go grand, staring at the starry sky, remembering how you came from stardust. Invite your imaginations to let you see things you cannot explain, and follow those imaginations like fairies in a garden. Invite wonder in and see what happens.